Ever notice how some court cases just they really stick with you?
Yeah.
The ones that kind of shift the ground beneath our feet legally.
Yeah. The ones that make you rethink how things
That's
work.
right. Well, that's exactly what we're diving into today.
Noah.
A total landmark decision, Montgomery v. State, back in 1922, Wisconsin Supreme Court.
Still massively important for understanding reckless conduct. And when it crosses the line into murder,
Yeah.
especially for you law students out there.
This isn't some dusty old case. It's a living precedent. So, what went down? We're talking real life tragedy here, right?
Absolutely. This case came from an awful set of facts. Imagine this, okay? A driver, Mr. Montgomery, he's going way too fast in a big vehicle.
Speeding never good.
No, and it gets worse. Busy public street, lots of people around, and he's intoxicated.
Oh, man. Recipe for disaster.
And disaster is what happened, a terrible collision. Mrs. Blanchard was killed.
Also.
Horrible injuries to others. One woman, Mrs. Kenny, lost both her legs.
That's just heartbreaking. You lay out those facts, and it really sets the stage for the legal battle, doesn't it?
It does, because the core question becomes, can driving like that, so reckless, under the influence, leading to death, can that be considered second-degree murder? Does it meet that depraved mind standard?
That's a heavy question. Where's the line between an accident, even a horrific one, and actual murder?
Exactly. And Montgomery helped define that line. It's about criminal culpability. When does recklessness become so bad it equals intent in the eyes of the law?
So, deep dive time. Let's break it down step by step. What did the prosecution have to prove to get that murder conviction?
Okay, so they laid out their case, evidence that Montgomery was going way too fast, way over the limit, not just any road either, a known busy street.
So, not like some empty back road where you could argue, oh, I didn't expect anyone to be there.
Right, this was a place with pedestrians, other cars, foreseeable risk, you know. And on top of that, the intoxication evidence. They hammered that home.
So it was the combo, right? Speeding like crazy where it was dangerous and being drunk.
That was the foundation of their argument. That behavior, taken together, showed a reckless disregard for human life. So reckless, it was practically intentional.
But hold on, they weren't saying he set out that day planning to kill someone, were they?
Nope, that's a key point. Second-degree murder in Wisconsin then, and mostly now, needs an imminently dangerous act, showing a depraved mind. But, and this is important, regardless of human life.
Meaning, you don't have to prove he wanted someone dead specifically.
Right. That's what makes it different from first degree, the premeditation. So the prosecution's challenge was proving Montgomery's actions, while maybe not aiming to kill, were so reckless, so indifferent to others' safety, that they showed that depraved mind.
I'm seeing where this depraved mind concept is tricky. It's about mens re, right? The mental state during the crime.
Exactly. It's not about what he did, it's about what was going on in his head. Did he know he was risking lives, not caring if people died?
Makes sense. So he's convicted. End of story.
Oh, not even close. He appealed all the way up to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. His lawyers had some strong arguments.
Lay him on me.
First, they went after the evidence, said it wasn't enough to prove depravity of mind, which is needed for second-degree murder.
Basically, yeah, he was negligent, it's tragic, but not full-blown disregard for life kind of argument.
Spot on. Then they got into the trial itself, claiming it wasn't fair.
Oh, interesting. What'd they point to?
Mrs. Kenny's testimony, the woman who lost her legs, they said having her there in court describing everything would make the jury too emotional.
Yeah, I can see that. Swayed by sympathy, not just the facts.
That was their point. And lastly, they claimed the prosecutor said some stuff to the jury that was inflammatory, prejudiced them against Montgomery.
Wow, so the Supreme Court had a lot to untangle. Facts of the case, what second-degree murder means legally, and then these trial fairness issues on top. What'd they decide?
Big decision. They upheld the conviction. Justice Rosenberry wrote the majority opinion, and they really went deep on what depraved mind means legally.
This is the precedent-setting part, right?
Huge. Rosenberry said, look, Montgomery being drunk, speeding that badly on a busy street, that's imminently dangerous conduct, no question. But more importantly, they said it showed a total disregard for human life. Bingo, depraved mind, box checked.
So the context mattered. Not just speeding, but where he was speeding.
Massive point. They emphasized this wasn't some random act on an empty road. This was a crowded area. Pedestrians, women, kids, other cars, all totally foreseeable.
Made it way more reckless, you're saying.
Amplified it to the point of depravity, legally speaking. And they were careful to say, this ain't first degree, no planned killing, which keeps it second degree.
Nuance matters. Okay, what about those trial issues? Mrs. Kenny's testimony, the prosecutor's words, all that.
Okay, so on the testimony, they said it was admissible, it was allowed, because her injuries were directly caused by Montgomery, so they were relevant to proving how reckless he was.
Even if it made the jury feel for her.
They acknowledged that risk, but said it didn't outweigh the value of her testimony for proving the facts. Now, the prosecutor's remarks, there's a catch. The defense didn't object when he said them during the trial.
Procedural stuff.
Huge. That meant the Supreme Court couldn't really review it properly on appeal. And they didn't think the remarks were so bad that the conviction should be tossed out just for that. Justice Rosenberry's opinion, by the way, uses some strong language. Calls the victims a group of innocent women and children run down under circumstances which afford no excuse or justification.
No mincing words there.
Nope. And he flat out said, this case illustrates every essential element of second-degree murder. Powerful stuff.
So why is this case, even from 1922, still so important today? What's the legacy of Montgomery v. State?
It's a big deal because it widened when you could charge second-degree murder, specifically in vehicular homicide cases. It set the precedent that extreme recklessness, even without wanting to kill someone, could be enough. If that recklessness shows what they called an abandoned and malignant heart.
Catchy phrase.
Totally. And it's stuck. It basically means deeply not caring about human life. And that idea became super important in later cases, not just car deaths, but anytime someone's super reckless and it leads to death, even without clear intent.
Like what?
Hazing cases, for example, where someone dies. Or creating a super dangerous situation on purpose. Montgomery gets cited all the time.
So it's not just defining murder, it's also about how courts handle evidence, right?
Right on. Montgomery highlights this balancing act courts do. They have to decide if evidence is relevant enough to be included, even if it might make the jury biased. Mrs. Kenny's testimony is a perfect example of that. And then there's the procedural stuff, like we said. Objecting at the right time matters. Failing to do that really hurt Montgomery's appeal.
It ties together a bunch of key legal ideas. So thinking about all this now, with a modern lens, does Montgomery still hold up?
That's the million-dollar question. Where's the line between recklessness that's just criminal negligence versus recklessness so bad it's basically murder? Montgomery pushed that line hard. And our views on drunk driving have changed so much since the 1920s. We've got public awareness campaigns, DUI laws are way stricter.
You're saying if this happened today, would the outcome be the same?
Right. Would that depraved mind idea hit the same way now? It makes you think.
Big time. And it gets even trickier when you think about, okay, those deaths were horrible, preventable. But is it really murder if there's no intent to kill? Just really, really bad choices.
Huge debate, legally and morally. Montgomery gets cited in cases today, especially when prosecutors try to bump up charges from manslaughter to murder. They'll use the extreme recklessness argument, often with things even worse than DUI, like insane speeding in a packed area, or if the driver has a bunch of prior DUI convictions.
Trying to make it fit the depraved mind mold.
Exactly. So, was Montgomery right even way back then? Did it get the balance right between acknowledging these deaths are more than accidents, but also that murder usually needs more than just recklessness, even extreme recklessness? That's something to keep chewing on as you study this stuff.
Food for thought, for sure. Now, for our listeners who are really into this, especially you law students, go read the actual Montgomery v. State opinion. Justice Rosenberry's writing is something else?
Oh, yeah. The way he describes the victims, the crash scene, it's powerful, really brings it to life. You get a feel for the emotion surrounding this case, the societal context. That stuff matters.
It helps you understand how the law evolves, right? How decisions get made.
Exactly. In this case, it's the basis for so much debate today about vehicular homicide, about what mens really means when it comes to murder. Understanding this old case helps you understand the arguments happening right now.
Past informing the present, as always. Thanks for this deep dive. It's been fascinating.
Anytime.
And for our listeners, keep those legal brains churning.
Stay curious.